Good afternoon, and open the House Committee on Education for Friday, February 2nd. Good to see all the members of the committee. We are going to have, first start with an informational hearing. This came about through one of those dangerous conversations in the lounge about the economic impact of higher education on the state of Oregon, and our two guests were kind enough to agree to come and provide information on that. So I'd like to ask Duncan Wise and Lynn Lundquist to please come on up and let us know what you know, so then we'll know.
Oh, you expect
to take short here? Unless they're actually directly
the books are you know me.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Duncan Wise. I am president of the Oregon Business Council, and would my colleague here introduce himself?
Okay. Lynn Lundquist, president of the Oregon Business Association.
Great. And I guess you've asked me to go first, so I'll give an overview of the council and our work, and then take however you'd like to proceed. The Oregon Business Council is an association of about 50 business executives from around the state that work on a variety of public policy issues that are, I think, of interest to the legislature. And one of our most important areas of focus, of course, is our work on education. And we've over the years been involved in this field in a wide variety of ways. The products you see from the Business Council probably most prominently are the Oregon Business Plan, and we have the Policy Playbook, which I've presented to you for those who don't have it. And we do provide the staff support for the Oregon Business Plan Steering Committee and all of that work. Our work on education also includes a group we call the Education Roundtable, which is a group of business leaders, philanthropy leaders, education leaders, and legislators that come together from time to time to talk about broad trends in education and what we need to be doing as a state to support education. And we've provided you today a product of the staff of this work, the 6 white papers, which I think are really nicely done under the leadership of Joe Kirk in our office. That really, I think, I'll be speaking to in just a few minutes. Under the roundtable, we've also developed a group of legislators, 1, 2, 3 of whom are here with us today, 11 who have been meeting over the last year or so to talk about some of the issues in the white paper and what we need to be doing in education as a state and what the role of the legislature is in terms of affecting change in education. Also in OBC, we have the E3 under our umbrella, the education and Employers for Education Excellence, which does the Small Schools Grant and a number of other projects on the ground. So a lot of activity on education. We consider it the key policy issue facing Oregon. It's always at the top of our list of priorities when we think about the future of Oregon. How we manage in education delivery in Oregon is absolutely pivotal to the future of Oregon in terms of our economy, in terms of our social fabric, in terms of who we are as citizens. So we believe strongly that this is a critical policy issue facing Oregon. What I'd like to do today is give you a summary and of our thinking and elaborate on it a little bit and then take your questions. I hope we can introduce this topic. It's a huge one, and I want to offer ourselves as a resource to you as you do your work going forward. I can't possibly touch on all the work we're doing, but I would like to summarize some key points. Basic premise we operate is this. The education system in Oregon needs to be transformed over the next 10 to 15 years to deliver much higher levels of education to Oregonians than we've had in the past. We have to redesign the system with the aim of dramatically improving the education outcomes for Oregonians if we're going to be successful in the 21st century in terms of the economy, in terms of our citizenry, and in terms of the social fabric. We've got to do that. The second feature, which is the most important from this audience, is you, the legislators and this body, are absolutely critical to making this happen. It will not happen without you. And unless you embrace a new vision for education delivery and help govern and manage and oversee the transformation of education, we're not going to get there. So you have a pivotal role. And three, unless you change the way you organize yourselves and manage the education enterprise through the legislature, we're not going to get there. So you have a very big role to play in getting where we need to go in terms of education delivery. If we do it, we're going to be a vastly more productive state, a much better state, but you're key to it all happening. So what I'd like to do is develop what I think the why we need to do this, what the vision for the delivery is, and then come back to why I think you're absolutely pivotal in making all this happen. So, and I'll try to do it briefly. To begin, why we need to do this. In the white paper, the first full white paper after the executive summary makes the economic case for education. It's really pretty simple. In the changing economy that we foresee in the 21st century, and that economy is already here, the demand for highly skilled people is growing every day, every year. And the economy of the past that existed in America and in Oregon, where you could go out with a relatively little education and earn a high wage, minimum wage job in the woods, in the mills, and fisheries, wherever you were, those days are gone. And the world we're going into will employ people at high wages if they have high skills, and they will not. The economy we foresee will not pay well unless you have high knowledge and skills in specific areas. And we'll talk more about the metrics in a moment. But that's the fundamental reshaping of the world we're in. And so education is critical if we want to maintain a strong, healthy society and middle class and have strong society in the future. We put some metrics together on what that might look like, and basically, and again, these are, think about it as sort of targets, and we may not be exactly right, but I think it sets the general direction for where we need to go. The numbers we've suggested are that we need to have an adult population where everybody has a very strong high school diploma, a diploma that really means something. And in addition to that, about 40% of the population needs to have a post-secondary credential. Might be an apprenticeship, it might be an associate degree, it might be in nursing or manufacturing, but a meaningful credential beyond high school. And another 40%, total of 80, need to have a baccalaureate degree. So 80% with some form of post-baccalaureate degree. So, and of that 40% that has a college degree, a lot of those need to have additional professional degrees. If we could achieve a result like that as a state, we would be vastly wealthier, our incomes would be higher, a lot more money would be coming into the state coffers through higher incomes, you would have much reduced social service costs and prison populations, and we're going to be a lot better place. A lot better place. If we can achieve that. Now, that may seem ridiculous or daunting or impossible, but I would just remind you that there was a period in the early 50s, when about 10% of the adult population had a higher ed degree, maybe 50% a high school degree, and a bunch of leaders got together in those days and reinvented the community college system, expanded dramatically the university system, and actually accelerated the K-12 system as well. And as a result, dramatically increased the education attainment of adults in Oregon and in the United States. We have done this before. But when we made those changes, and since that time, roughly the early 60s, we have flattened down on our education output. In that period, we're now at about 27% of adults have a college degree in Oregon, and roughly half of those have a degree beyond college. And we have an increment of those that have some post high school education, but most of them aren't really a certified credential degree. So but we have been at that state for now quite some time. And what I'm suggesting is it's time we make a leap. That we consciously decide that we need to educate ourselves at higher levels, and we set out on that course to do that. So that's proposition one, and I think the most fundamental proposition I would make to you. If we do that, Oregon will be a much better place. Now, the question, there's obviously a number of questions if you decide you want to be on that journey. And the most fundamental is it possible? Can we actually do that? And I think the answer is very clear. The answer is no if you assume we have the existing institutions as they are. The only way you're going to get there is to redesign the education delivery system. You cannot get there by simply saying, we'll keep what we have, put more money into it, and just assume it'll work. You have to consciously decide you want that. You have to redesign the system, and then you'll have to invest in it. And you have to do both investment and redesign at the same time, because the current system was not designed to lead to the outcomes I've suggested. The current system was designed to educate people at certain levels, and if they weren't making it, to drop them off. And the system was always designed to have people dropping off along the way. And some would get to very high levels, some wouldn't. We never had the expectation that all students would be at high levels, and nearly everybody would be at post-secondary levels. And if we want that, we have to create that expectation in the system, and we have to create a curriculum that enables that to happen. And it doesn't exist today, so we have to redesign the system.
Mr. West?
Yes.
My vice chair has a question.
Yes, and I need to take questions along the way here.
I haven't spent some time with you, and as I look up and down the aisles here, I've had education discussions with every one of my colleagues, and to a person, they want to improve the system. The opinions that we, all of us carry our own notion, but I want you to give me two things or three. I don't care if you give us 10. I can tell you that if you give us something to do that we can do to make education better in this state, we won't go do it. We'll run and do it. Tell us what to do.
All right. Well, let me. I will get there. I have a few ideas. I promise. But let me just, because I'm going to turn to that right now. So if you mind, I'll continue.
All right.
So that's the task. But again, well, I'm spending the time on this because, frankly, that is not how the legislature usually thinks about its role in relation to education. The typical role of the legislature in education is to respond to what comes before you. Mm-hmm. I'm saying the first step is something that Representative Roblin and I have talked about with a number of you, is the first step is to have a vision and hold it. Not one year, not one session, but to say, this is where we're going, and let's be real clear about where we're going, and design a system in the legislature that creates those expectations for that. The enterprise that you oversee, this vast enterprise of education services that you're responsible for. And so actually, step one that I would suggest to you is that you actually agree on a vision in a bipartisan way among yourselves, says this is where we want to take this system, and be very clear on it. And once you have done that, there are a number of steps that you will then want to take to drive it. But I can see I've got a couple more questions already. So,
Representative Carroll?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Duncan, I appreciate your comments about a vision, and I think that's one of the things that maybe we've been lacking all over in the state in a lot of different areas has been vision. But very specifically, I would argue that a top-down approach is not going to work. And I think that's what we had in the early 90s with the first 21st Century Schools Plan. It was a top-down approach. It was driven by the legislature, but then it was never really finished by the legislature. And it was passed after Measure 5 passed. Mm-hmm. So blame it on Measure 5, I think, is a little bit erroneous. But so how do we, so looking at the lessons learned from passage of the Century 21 schools and the failure of the SEM and the CAM, how do we navigate around that so that we don't have a top-down approach that we're forcing something on that to a system that, quite frankly, suffers very much from NIH syndrome. Not invented here.
Yeah.
If it's not their idea, then it's not a good idea. How do we navigate around that to get to where it is that you're talking about going?
Mr. Chair, Representative Crummell, there's not an easy answer to this, so I'm going to just start with that. I don't have an answer that's going to be complete, and I totally understand the problem, and I agree with it. I think there's a paradox here. I think your leadership is critical. At the same time, you need to be engaged in the community, and frankly, part of your job is to identify a lot of the work I'm going to be describing is already happening right now, and what you need to do is find it, celebrate it, encourage it, But again, have your own vision in mind. I think the vision isn't unique to me or you or any. I think if you go out and talk with Oregonians about what we're talking about, you're going to find a lot of interest in this if you give people a chance to think about it and talk about it. But I think it is part of your responsibility and our responsibility collectively to engage the broader public in terms of what are the changes in the economy, why we need to change education attainment, and help build the broad public support. And as you do that, I think you're going to find examples all over the place of people who are trying to do the kind of reinvention of the systems I'm going to describe in a minute. And then your job is to help them. Because I do not think this should be viewed as a top-down, control-oriented, we're going to tell you to do this, this, and this. I think what you're going to find is if you say, this is where we want to go, we need to know what it's going to take to help you in the field get where you want to go, you're going to find people coming to you and asking for lots of support. And you're going to be inspired by what you see. That's what I see on the state. I'm on the state board, and that's what I see when I get out and talk to folks. There's amazing work going on out there. But there are barriers. There are all kinds of barriers that are created by an antiquated system of governance and delivery that we've got to, your job, our job, is to help fix. The system is not designed, again, I stress, it's not about people who are, mean-spirited or not wanting to do things. You always have a few, I suppose, but the basic problem is the system needs to be redesigned, and our job is to collectively redesign the system. But, anyway, long answer. And
follow up, Mr. Chair?
Yeah.
Yes. Thank you. I don't disagree with you, and I have been out in the community, and I've also been in the educational system over the last few years. One of the things there basically are three things that I'm hearing. Number one is that I hear from a lot of my constituents is why can't the schools just get back to the basics? Why can't we just teach reading, writing, arithmetic, type of thing? The other two things that I'm hearing is I want to have a choice mm-hmm. as far as where my kid goes, mm-hmm. and I want to have a choice in terms of the methodology mm-hmm. that's being used. That's one of the things that's exciting about seeing online schools coming in and seeing school districts adopting the possibilities of having some online components and in some cases just the full program is online because it's another methodology. It's giving students another option. Is that the kind of redesign mm-hmm. that you're talking about? We're not just looking at the bricks and mortar kind of an operation. We're not just looking at a specific curriculum, but rather opening things up.
Mr. Chair, Representative Cromwell, yes, I think that's part of the big question is the future of delivery, and actually that is, as I'll talk about our work, that's actually our next area of focus in terms of our research, but I totally believe we're at the beginning of a revolution in delivery, which calls, again, for this different model. The problem we face, I'll come back to my recommendation, but you're moving me in a slightly different direction. Your example is yet one of many examples of the scrambling of the delivery system. I mean, if you're talking about online services, who provides it? It can be a different school. Salem has a really good online school program that could be delivered all over the state. How do you fund it? All the delivery issues. And then you also have examples of community colleges offering services to high school students and universities providing classes on high school campuses. And how do you design a system that allows that flexibility and fluidity when you have a K-12 silo, a community college silo, a university silo, all funded with completely different budget models, completely different distribution systems, and that aren't designed to connect with each other. So if you look at the partnerships that emerge among these sectors, they often are very much jerry-rigged, trying to figure out how to work what people want to do, whether it's an early college program or these programs where students are allowed to move through the systems seamlessly. There are a lot of barriers along the way in terms of how we fund and govern these systems that make it a lot harder than it needs to be. And that's so I'm all absolutely over the idea that we have to redesign the delivery system and allow students more flexibility and pathways to get where they want to go. And that's part of the work we have to be doing.
So I'm going to get to your question. You actually do have a place you want to get to in your remarks here.
That's all right.
But so if it's okay, members, if we can let Mr. Weiss, are you comfortable?
No, yeah. His questions pop up if you've got it. It's fine. Choice.
I'll take advantage of your generosity. And Representative Greenock.
Hi, Doc, and thank you for coming.
Thank you.
I'd like to read something in your report.
Mm-hmm.
It says these obsolete systems created in the early and mid-1900s were not designed to meet the education needs of the 21st century. To meet such demands as the 2040-40 vision, our education systems will require substantial redesign. So current systems are not designed to meet goals as ambitious as 2040-40, we're well entrenched and resistant to change. Redesigning them will require significant resources, effort, and public will.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to talk a little bit about the plan for higher education in the Portland metropolitan area, if you will. And as I read your proposals, they're pretty marginal. There's nothing revolutionary. They'd all be great, the 2007 proposal, but they all take into account the existing system and leave it in place. It strikes me that if we don't have a plan for higher education in the metropolitan area, that's really dramatic and revolutionary and looks towards this kind of model. We don't have a plan for higher education in the state of Oregon because two-thirds of the population live in the metro area. I think you and I have talked about my PSU OHS proposal, and that's one example. But there, and I'd love you guys to back that example, but the point is, I mean, that looks to, you're talking about us creating a vision, that looks to revolutionary change, well, evolutionary change in the system. And how do we get, I mean, every time I mention that proposal, although it may be different this year, it's, oh, but that's not how we do it. You know, your statement about the resistance to this from the existing system, how do we move from you guys ought to work together and produce funding to really seriously consider things that inherently and basically change the way we do things?
All right. Well, I'll give you mine. We've thought deeply about this, about the tools, the most important tools to make transformational change. And I will tell you honestly, I don't think it's structural change at the institution level right now. And it may be down the road, but not now. The most significant change, and I want to turn you to page 45 of the playbook, and this is a chart that three of you were heavily involved with, and it's kind of complicated, but I think it'll maybe be a guide. We liked it when we produced it, but I don't know. And again, it starts with the goal, the 2040-40, and the benchmarks that we associate with the continuum. If you think about the education delivery, starting at birth all the way into adult education, we need to set benchmarks along the way for what we're expecting in terms of student outcomes. And so again, page 45 of the policy playbook. And then we what we envision is a continuum of education services to get to those results. And what we think are the three critical ingredients for redesign are, one, redesigning the curriculum in a way that enables students to move at their own speed towards specific standards at their own pace as far and as fast as they want to go, so that they have that there are no barriers created by institutional levels, that they just keep moving, and that we have clear standards so that if you're ready for college level work by the time you're 14, 15, you start taking college work. If you need more time to meet the standards, you get the time, the additional supports. The time isn't the ingredient, it's meeting standards is the ingredient. And in that curriculum, the students have a wide variety of ways of learning, and all that learning is, especially as you get older, connected with a clear objective in terms of where students want to take their learning, a student plan and profile, if you will. And that the curriculum is rich with applied learning opportunities. It's the redesign of the curriculum and creation of a variety of learning opportunities that is really going to provide the support for the education delivery model. And it will play out in a huge variety of ways in terms of what education services look like, including undoubtedly redesigning the institutions in the Portland area along the way. But I can't tell you exactly what it looks like, but it's got to be in mind with this vision. The second thing that has to happen is we need a data system that does two things. One, it allows students to keep track of their learning progress across the continuum and allows you to know how every student is doing in every program that they're in the state, so you can track the progress and success of the continuum. So you know exactly where every student, how every student in the state is doing, and you can and see the summaries of data. So you have good information about the progress of the enterprise. And the third piece, which is last and certainly not least, I argue, is the critical pivotal tool to everything, is you need a budget system. You need to redesign the way you do the budget for pre-K through 20. The system is not going to get us where we want to go, and it's the most powerful tool you have to make change, by far. The current budget system is absolutely antiquated. It's three different systems, as I mentioned, three different distribution models that don't talk to each other in terms of you can't make easily comparisons and bury a huge amount of important information about the performance of the system. We need a budget system that identifies, starts with the major groups of learners, pre-K learners, elementary school learners, special ed learners, middle school learners, all the major categories that tell us how much we're spending per student right now, that describe what the performance of those students are right now, and gives you an idea of how that money is being spent in terms of the programs that are delivered, and allows you then to set expectations for performance and enable you to set your budgets with performance expectations in mind across the continuum, and it allow you to make choices and choices based on real information about where the money goes on how you want to allocate your dollars. Without that kind of a performance-based budget system, you're not going to get where you want to go. You're not going to have the tool that is going to drive change. So the biggest institutional change, the hardest change, will be right in this building. That's a very big task to redesign your budget system.
That was a nice answer. And I would say everything you said, I mean, I can't disagree with anything you said. It's a good 2000. Well, it'd be a good 1998 goal. And since we're past 1998, it would be a good goal for 2007. And, I mean, it's a requirement of our broken system. But the question is, where do we go for 2020? We're only... Mm-hmm. We're only 13 years away from there, and you do all these things and dump these high school kids out ready to go to college, and they're going to end up in California because we're not going to be able to handle them. And it's not only a budgeting system, although it is an investment system. Mm-hmm. It's that we don't have a university structure here. I have one way to change one piece of it. But we do not have a university system that will get us 20, 30, 40 without basic and dramatic changes to the way we are doing our university system in a 50 or 100 year old model, and it just doesn't work.
And Chair Representative Greenlich, you're going to reach that conclusion instantly once you see the budget numbers, and that's what your budget system should tell you, and it should tell you right now. That's exactly the kind of conversation. The question is, does that conversation happen currently in the legislative ways and means process? And if not, why not?
There are several of us who would like it to be.
So, but it's a budget design. And please, I'm not trying to. Just like we say, everybody's entrenched and everything is. These are very difficult change processes to go through, and I don't want to underestimate. I'm suggesting we all complain about other people not changing. You know, I need to change. We all need to change. I'm saying the legislature's role has got to be defined in the education enterprise, and its fundamental role is setting a vision, understanding the current performance of the system, budgeting with performance expectations in mind, and helping the system improve itself based on the barriers it identifies as you try to move towards your goals. That's the role of the legislature, I would argue. Now, if that's your role, if you buy my argument, then you have to think about how well am I fulfilling my role, and how are we doing as a legislature to get where we need to go to play our role appropriately. I actually don't think the legislator's role is to do the on-the-ground delivery redesign. I think that's probably more likely to happen more effectively by people on the ground figuring it out and coming up with ideas. That's my opinion. You can disagree with it. But I know this is critical work for the legislature.
Representative Robin.
Thank you very much, Chair. And I want to thank you, Duncan, also for taking your time to be on the state board. I mean, I think it goes unnoticed at times how much time people put in those positions, and I do understand that. And I guess what I want to go back to is the first part, and that's the vision, and we went through it fairly quickly because this is a big, and we've had this discussion. From my perspective, answers to Mitch's too, you know, when Kennedy said we'll be on the moon in 10 years, that was the vision. And the people bought the vision. And then the other things fell into place. He didn't know how to get there. No one knew how to get there when the vision was set. But we made it because people across our country were committed to it. And from my perspective, it's the same thing about the vision that we have to set here. And from my perspective, it needs to be the governor and the state board and Susan at the department office. everybody has to have in their bones that vision, and we have to come to an agreement on it. I personally like the 40-40.
The Board of Higher Education.
And the Board of Higher Education. Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, exactly. And, I mean, it's that 40-40-20, or the 20-40-40, is a vision that I think people can understand. And fundamentally, I agree with you, once that vision is truly, people capture it, and then they start realizing what it takes to get there, other things like the budget have to flow. You can't get there otherwise. And the people out there providing it will feel energized because they have a vision and a goal about what their work is about. And it will instruct what has to happen. The things that were needed to get to the moon were not even conceived of when we got, by the time we got there, all this other stuff fell out of the place because that's what they needed to get there. They could not have told you what that was at the beginning. We can't say what our higher ed system looks like today if we really didn't meet this vision, other than to know what we have. We'll not get it there. And I think that's agreed. And so, but if you don't have the vision clearly in everybody's mind driving it, there is no chance to get there. And so I just want to emphasize that the whole idea is us coming together with an idea. It has to permeate this building. It has to permeate the institutions, all of them, if we really want to get there. And we have to all buy into it because it isn't an easy thing to buy into. So that's just my statement.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess, Duncan, I reached out ahead of you, which is not uncommon for me to do. But we spent a lot of time, and perhaps I'm preempting. There's three of us here, Representative McConnell, Representative Wilburn, and myself, that closeted ourselves with Duncan and other people for about 18 months. And that vision is 20-40-40, serving on workforce and economic development. We had 100,000 jobs on the table in 20 minutes in that committee. And every one of those jobs required additional education, a better trained workforce. And I thought back to our times together, and I am so confident that that committee is on the right course that I want Duncan to come in here and give us the list of things to do so that we can get busy. Mm-hmm. I mean, that we do not have a lot of time to waste. So the 2020, the 2040 laying out the vision was the first step, and I agree with Ronnie. The group of us, I think we're pretty solid on this. The next step in my mind is a transparent budget that is targetable. In other words, a continuum from 0 to 20, and that's grades, not age, because we'll have people coming in and out of the continuum. But we have to be able to say, if we need conductors to staff the Southern Pacific Railroad, which I guess we do, then we can impact that budget at the appropriate place. If our people can't read and therefore can't be conductors, we can back all the way down the system and say, we must teach reading. If reading's not the problem, but some other vocational skill is, and I think it's imperative that we start with a targeted and transparent budget. And so I wanted to run out. I was going to wait until 1:45 until I made the motion, but I guess I'll give the rest of you a little more time to catch up.
Thank you, Representative. So do you have, I'd like to get Ms. Lundquist in.
Sure. I have a comment on just on the budget issue, just so you, I mean, I know it may sound very theoretical, but again, thanks to the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation and through the Governor's Office and the joint boards, there is an effort going on by Nancy Heiligman right now to, and I know some of you have seen some preliminary work, to do this budget design. This is not we're going to take it out of the theory. We've had sketchy versions of it, but it's going to become much more clear, I think, as you take a look at this really terrific work that's going on, what a transparent, unified budget might look like. And I think as you look at it, and I would encourage you to bring Nancy and crew in and really take a look and think about the implications, it's really exciting. And again, I think it's a transformational tool that the legislature is going to adopt. The final piece, and again, thank you for your patience with me, is there are specific budget items that we will bring to you, and I haven't talked about legislation or the particular budget items. We have identified some in the playbook, and we're going to have more specifics for you as we sort of take the understand all that's in front of you. And that's all important. There's a lot of specific work you can do this session, and we'll do, and it'll be great. But I would just close again. If you don't see your fundamental task as transforming the way you do business in a different model for how you run the building, we're not going to get where we want to go. And that's why I really, really focus on that today, because in the end, I picture a legislature that every session begins asking, how are we doing against the vision? How are the elementary school kids doing? How are the middle school? How are we doing at every stage, reviewing our performance as a state over the past 2 years? And then asking, what are we going to do this session to move us forward on our journey towards the goals? That's a very different concept of what the legislature's mission is. And you'll have to have processes set up to do that. And again, I think we can help. We're eager to help any way we can in helping you be a participant and really the leader of this journey. Thank you.
Can I ask a brief question?
There's an agreement.
When would you like to see us get to 2044? Because I love that vision. Are we talking about 20 years from now?
Thank you. To be honest with you, in terms of the pipeline, I'd like to see us move to that fairly quickly. If you actually take the full adult population, it takes a bit longer because I would like to see the pathway of young people move to that over, we'll have to do the research, a decade, definitely.
Oh, yeah.
And ideally sooner, but definitely in a decade. But to actually get to that result takes quite a while because just you're changing the mix as boomers retire. But right now, we're not even close to that in terms of, in fact, if anything, the numbers are falling. We're going in the wrong direction. So this is urgent business, no question about it. And again, to just make sure, you absolutely will require infrastructure change, delivery change in all the systems.
Representative Wisnik, do you have a question?
Comment. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Duncan, thanks for all you've done. I think that I see this as a very difficult task. I think everyone up here and everyone in this building wants to improve education. I don't see it happening. There's too many cases. I appreciate and respect you very much. I don't think it's a bipartisan or partisan issue. It's a regional. It's a district. You know, I can't do something that's going to hurt my district. Until we get this elevated with something like the military had with the base closure, where you have someone outside the system that's not trying to protect their own interest, we're never going to make these reforms. We're not going to get the vision. If you don't have someone bring us a plan, a structure, a system change, we're not going to get there. I think that it's got to come from outside. It's got to come in and be forced on us to make these changes. Otherwise, you're going to have high growth districts against declining enrollment. You're going to have Portland schools against the rest of the system, and you're never going to get there. I hope I'm wrong.
Well, Mr. Chair, Representative Wisnett, I have great faith in all of you, actually. I really do. I really honestly believe, and I will tell you the story. We have this group, and Pat Callen from the Center for Higher Ed Policy came and met with the group, presented a lot of conversation. He said, this is the best group of legislators he'd ever met with. And he's met with all of them, basically. You all have the capability of doing this. I mean, I'm not saying, if you want plans, I mean, if you want proposals on structure or anything, believe me, I'm more than happy to bring materials to you. And I also agree, and we're working, my state board role and serving the governor is very much dedicated to redesigning the executive side to support this vision. And we've got a lot of work to do there, which we can talk about. But this legislature is capable of doing this work. Absolutely is. But you absolutely have to lift this beyond anything that could be your normal nature of partisanship. I understand that it's got to be viewed as something.
Partisan,
it's got to be something. In the sense of it's got to be viewed as a shared vision. There'll be differences of opinion on specific issues, but there's got to be a commonality of purpose that you all share that allows this to happen.
It's in
and this is kind of, is actually a comment along that line. those of you who are not involved in the discussions that we got to have about the budget system, I think the easiest way, and I think it's important to state some of the things that need to happen for that to happen, so people have a better vision of it. And clearly for me, it was transformational in my way of thinking about it when the discussion finally got to the point where they said, you know, right now when you go into Ways and Means, the Department of Ed comes in and says what they need, other groups come in and say what they need, and all these different silos come in and talk about what they need to do education. And the issue was, no, what you need to say is, we have pre-K education. Everybody that's involved in pre-K needs to come in and tell us what you need for that, because what do we need to have a vision of what it costs to do pre-K. And then 1, 2, and 3, Ed, come on back. We need to, what do you think we need to have to fund education, K, 1, 2, 3, in our state? And each of those organizations that are helping do that have to come in and do that, so that you get a vision across a continuum of what it takes to provide that education to our kids, all the way up through the system. So it's not one time you get to come and say, I need a budget of $6.3 billion, or whatever it is. It is, here's what we need here, here's the investment we need to make to get our kids where we want them to go in this pipeline. And until we can have that discussion, until we can actually see those numbers about that kind of stuff and what that's borrowing, it's going to be difficult for us to really understand how big a deal this is going to be. And we really do need to have Massey and others come in here and give us a little description of how that works, so we see the vision of that too, I think.
The comment that I would make, and this is reference to people that weren't part of our work group, the most powerful thing was that there wasn't one issue that came that we talked about that there wasn't total, complete consensus around the table. And the thing that brought us to that consensus is not talking about our districts. It wasn't talking about anything political. We didn't have time. But it was all focused on the students. It wasn't focused on, you know, how we're going to build more colleges. It wasn't focused on how we're going to take care of all the special ed kids, because the vastness of this is so huge that there's no way that we could take a look at that. But to have total consensus that we need to have a sense of urgency, all of us working together in order to come to a movement, whether you call it transformational change, and I don't like the word reform, but that we need to move Oregon forward and do it together. And it is about children. It's not about a school district or a community, east, west, and all those things. And so when we put the big umbrella on, it's really incredible to have people in the room that reach that level of consensus.
Thank you, Representative. Mr. Weissman, thank you so much. I know it's a Friday, members, et cetera, and you don't like homework. But for those of you who have not read yet the six white papers, I would really implore you to do so. I think they will provide a framework for our work throughout the session. And so, I implore you to take the time to. I know everybody's got tons of things to read. Please do. I appreciate very much the energy and the thoughtfulness and all of your work towards this end, and I look forward to working with you to try to bring it to fruition. Our former speaker is here, and we're very pleased to have him. So, Mr. Lundquist.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm not sure where to start here. I feel like you just had a feast about education, enjoying and evaluating all that Duncan has done in his organization, and so I feel like so a little bit like the waiter that may be coming in to serve the purpose, because I have played a different role, and OBA has played a different role. Again, I really and all am very, very sincere about all the work that the OBC and Duncan has been a leader on, not only at that capacity and, as you mentioned, on the state board and other venues as well. I view it as we all probably have a role to play, and we don't all necessarily want to play or should play the same role. The Oregon Business Association, first of all, doesn't have the history or the resources that OBC has, and they've brought in other resources and done a great job of that. We're a fairly new organization, been around only since 1999, and We represent about 300 companies, businesses throughout the state. Just to be very briefly, we're often thought of as sort of the Portland Statewide Business Association, I think, because that's where we started. And really, we are branching out across the state more and more. Proud of the fact that we have such diverse members as the largest dairy in the state and the largest feedlot in the state and some individual ranches. Of companies of all kinds. The point I'm simply making is that we are a diverse group. However, we are very homogeneous compared to the typical business association. And the reason that's true is because we were formed around some philosophies.
My apologies as a rookie chair. I didn't ask you to identify yourself record.
I did earlier. That's why I didn't do it.
Okay.
Lynn Lundquist, President of Oregon Business Association. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, sir.
We are formed around philosophies, and our philosophy are more macro in approach rather than micro, if you will. Our association, we work on the everyday business issues to a certain extent, whether it's workers' comp or permitting process or that sort of thing. But we believe the real business issues in this state are a quality education system, a viable transportation system that moves people and products at a reasonable time at a reasonable cost, a healthy economy and environment together. Those do certainly go together. And then affordable and accessible health care. So we have sort of a more macro approach. But today we'll just talk about the business, the education portion of that. Education is very, very basic to the success of any business, as you all know. You all know that. But I'll just, emphasize it by this comment. In the 03-05 session, or the 03 session, I guess, for that biennium, we came down here to the legislature and said we had three priorities. And as you know, you were in the bottom of the barrel, so to speak, economically at that time. And we said we had three priorities, and those were education, education, education. And we actually came down and actually brought a budget to you that we had put together in a macro analysis and how you could possibly get out, and some of you weren't here at the time, I realized that, out of that economic woes. And I was proud that the legislature in the end actually used 11 of the 14 methods we presented or different alternatives. The reason I'm speaking about that is here you have a business association that understands the value of the education. And I'm not going to go into the dialogue. Duncan does a tremendous role with that. The role that OBA plays to a great degree is to try to help implement that. And we work very closely with the OBC, and I think that's a role that we play in our challenge to try to be successful in, and frankly, it's damn tough because we haven't been very successful in some ways. I'm an economist by trade, I guess, and so I always think of things in economic terms, and our association tends to do the same. And I think education is all about inputs and outputs. I think it's that simple. I really do. You talk about transparent budgeting and changing the process, the whole culture in which we find ourselves. In the end, that's what it comes to. The transparency budgeting is, and Duncan, I think we're certainly on the same page here, is that what do you get for the resources you put in? We have to value it that way. And the reason I believe it's so critical is that some of you talked about, you know, we made it to the moon, and you had a vision to do that. You also had the will of those that were in charge to make it happen. And unfortunately, in some ways, you do not have the ultimate authority to do that because you all represent people from your districts. And I think you're a cross-section of that. And SOC Board has done a lot of research and polling and so forth, and I was at one of the meetings, and Sue Hilbeck, who I'm sure has been before your committee, said that their polling showed that Oregonians wanted a quality education system. I don't believe that. I believe they want a quality education system as long as they don't have to support it in addition to the way they already are. And I say that a little bit cynical, but what the point I'm trying to make is, until they have the vision, that's the point I want to get here, until your constituents have the vision, you need to lead them. But somehow, somewhere along the line, you have to have them along with you. I've always had a problem of being too far ahead of the pack, so to speak. And if you run out front and nobody's with you, it's not going to do any good. So I'm simply trying to build upon what Michael has said here, is that you have the key role, but it's broader than just what you do within the budget process. I absolutely believe that. I think until we can make that happen, it's very hard to get this, what I call a paradigm shift, to make that actually happen. To help you in that venue, you can call it what you want to, but I think there needs to be a model for education that allows you to change as time goes along. So that as the best practice, whatever they might be, whether it's higher ed or community colleges or whatever level, we have a living document that we can change that. So if a group say, you know, this is what we ought to do, we should be able to put that into the budget, put it into the model, however you want to call about it, and see what the outcome is. That's absolutely essential for that. That's my opinion. In order for that to transpire, that is very, very difficult. And I'm not sure that at the present moment that we probably have pre-K through higher ed that maybe is willing to be a part of that and put themselves into that model. I hope that develops over time. I'm not pessimistic. I just think we have had silos that you've talked about. It is a change. It is a shift. And certainly you people can help be the leader in that. But they actually have to come along as well. So you had a great conversation with Duncan here. I don't want to prolong. I just simply want to say that to the business community, we have to have the best education system we possibly can. And that education system is not just about how many make it to higher ed and become professionals. I think we've driven that. I think that's a paradigm shift we have to make. The welders and the plumbers and electricians need to have a different stature in life, be thought of as people different than what we have done over times in history. I just think that's all part of this paradigm shift that has to happen. I saw very sort of perplexed looks on my face when I said people in Oregon don't want to call it an education system. I'm simply trying to prove a point. I think if you ask them for the resources necessary at the moment, they don't have enough confidence in the system to be willing to make that change. And I hope that OBA can play a little role in that, OBC can, and obviously all of you doing that same process. But to me, that's the real challenge. It's the resources in and the resources out, and to change the culture out there that they really believe it. It's the one word that keeps coming back to me that's the problem, and that's investment. And when I talked about the macro areas that we're interested in, it's the investment of that that we're interested in, whether it's in the highways or in the education system. And, you know, ladies and gentlemen, representatives, with all the responsibility you have on you, the question is, you know, how can we make that paradigm shift? How can you help lead that paradigm shift to bring us to where Duncan wants us to be and all us together? Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Ms. Horne. Question. Representative Wilbur.
Thank you, Chair. I want to say, kind of on the record, that the movement in Oregon in education is, in the last 10 or 15 years, was carried by Lynn Lundquist, and I appreciate that. Having seen the quality education model and the efforts you made to work that through the system and to have real discussions about what it takes to fund education and what makes up a quality education program in a model that is supposed to grow and can change when you put stuff into it. Along with that, when you say that you're not sure the people are there, the people in this committee need to understand, I have never seen any legislator who spent more time traveling around this state. You did your, you know, the chalkboard talks to their 100,000 people. I think Representative and Speaker Lundquist talked with 100,000 by himself. He was in almost every school in the state. I know every school district had him visit, and almost every high school in the state had a visit from the Speaker at the time he was doing that to look at things and see what was going on, understands the issues about what we need facility-wise, all of those other things. So I just want to commend the work you do, and I see this whole thing with OBC as an extension of where you began this effort. And I watched you pay the political prices for all that work, too. So I commend you for that. I commend you for being that bipartisan person whose drive was education. So thanks for being here.
Thank you. Thank you. Any other questions, comments?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a comment and a question to clarify and part of it for the record. But the comment being, I couldn't agree more from a standpoint of how we view pre-K through 20 and that sort of thing. What I think we want to make sure of is that we're careful of is that we don't get into what I'll term as a re-siloization. You know, right now we have the silos there, and if all we do is sort of reshift them so that we and assign different names, so our nomenclature has changed, but our action really hasn't, then I don't think we've really gotten very far. So I would just warn us, I guess, as re-siloization of our educational system. I couldn't agree more as far as the unified budget process being our standpoint. I think having the money follow the kid so that the kid and the parent have the choice of where the kid gets their education is really important. I guess to a certain degree I would call our system somewhat a needing to have the McDonaldization. And what I mean by that. No, I know. But what I mean by that is that, you know, if you go into one McDonald's, you've gone to them all. From a standpoint of the quality of the food. Okay, I won't go there. But the architecture of the buildings and so on and so forth. My point is, though, is that their staffs are trained the same. The equipment that they use is the same, and that means that if a child goes to an elementary school in John Day, or they go to an elementary school in Astoria, or they go to an elementary school in Portland, irrespective of where it is in Portland, they should be able to get the same quality education at either one of those places. Irrespective of where they are. My question, though, is I'll get off my soapbox. My question, though, is around, and this is just because I want it on the record, around the benchmarks that were used. These are the benchmarks that have come out of the Oregon Shines booklet and the project that has been worked on for the last almost 20 years. I know Duncan's been heavily involved. Is that correct?
Yes.
Yes. Thank you. I just wanted to make sure that was on
the
record. Mr. Dollar. Yes, I hear both of you screaming for the same thing. Duncan, you say that you tell us that Nancy Heiligman is working on a budget that works the continuum pre-K to 20. Do you have any notion of a timeline on when we could look at a model of that, or when we might present that and exercise at least to look at it as a maybe?
I believe I'll call her right now, but I mean, I think it's soon. I mean, with this is, I know she's got material already, so I know they're anticipating, they're planning to show it to you in the next number of weeks. I mean, within 2 or 3 weeks, I believe. I know what they're doing is, again, this, and I think the world of that team, and it'll be terrific. And I don't want to overpromise, but I know she keeps saying you're overpromising, but what she's trying to do and what she's doing is, and I think many of you have seen the spreadsheet we put together last time to illustrate it. She's taking it to a much deeper level, but she will be able to show you where the dollars go by major categories in a year, 2004-05 school year, and that's what they're working on. So, and again, once you have it, I think it'll start raising issues, and I think it'll change. Once you start working with it, it changes your perspective, and I think introduces a whole new series of conversations. So I'm sure she would love to be before you very soon.
We would love to have her as soon as possible. Please
and again,
convey to her our invitation.
And again, the right, no, sorry.
Very good.
Yeah, I'd like to point out, as a part of your policy briefing and economic development, you talk about how local place is important in the economic development structure. And I assume the same thing is true in education, in a sense, that while we need a statewide integrated system, place is really relevant.
Yes.
Relates to, as we talked a moment before about the Portland and Palm area, but also relates to Eastern Oregon, Southern Oregon, the Central Valley. How does place fit into this ability to deal with an education system at the same time you're dealing with economic development?
Okay, Mr. Chair, I don't agree. That's a very, that's a vast question. let me pass it to you. I'm not sure, a couple different. I'm not sure where you're, what you're thinking, but I'll tell you what I am. A couple observations on economic development specifically. One of the keys to, I think, a successful education and education delivery system is going to be for the schools in the community to connect very closely with employers to meet their very specific needs. And those needs vary a lot based on what clusters exist in a particular community. And competitive advantage is going to be weaving those clusters really tightly with the education services in a way that learning goes on that you can't replicate easily in other places. When you've done that, when you have those networks of relationships within industry clusters, whether it's, pick your cluster in your community, then you have something that another community can't easily replicate, and that creates enduring competitive advantage. So the broader point on this is, as we talk about a unified curriculum and a unified system at some level, we also need incredible innovation and specialization. It's not like we're going to there are many, many, many job categories we could not possibly manage them on a central basis. It has to be that local connection between the schools and the community. The other observation, more basic, is communities have different values, and we need to respect those values, and they have different interests and different ways of education and priorities, and we need to respect those. So when we talk about a unified curriculum, a unified system, I understand what you're saying, Representative Crummell and McDonald's, but I don't want us to think like every place looks the same. There's a lot of commonality around expectations, but the way the schools look in communities would be very, very different.
Yeah, I mean, just comment.
Mr. Greenman?
Yeah, I made the point that if we don't have a plan for higher ed, then the Metropolitan Area won't have a plan for higher ed in Oregon. But having said that, the same thing is true. We don't have a plan for higher ed in Southern Oregon. Mm-hmm. We don't have a plan for higher ed in Oregon. We don't have a plan for Eastern Oregon. We don't have a plan. We don't have a plan for Bend in that area. We don't have a plan for higher ed. I mean, while we need an integrated program and seamless, still, Eastern Oregon University is serving pretty much Eastern Oregon students. Southern Oregon, very much the same way. And Central Oregon is working very hard to create an education plan that will serve its needs in education, economic development, everything else. And something we have to, again, be looking at for 2020.
Right.
So we're talking about getting the pipeline a decade from now. We're talking about those people graduating in 2020, and that's the time frame we need to be.
Representative, just to note, we will have the presence of the regionals in the sub on higher ed, I believe, in about a week and a half, and that is definitely part of the conversation, is the development of that system.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Lankus, did you have comments?
Mr. Chair, just one comment. We're talking today about the education system, and it hasn't changed and so forth. I guess a word of, I won't say caution, I guess, but a word of encouragement. If we look at what this legislature has done over the years, over the decades, really, and I think if you look back, that probably the single biggest thing that has become an impediment to the future that we want is the lack of flexibility in when they come up with programs. I think in this building, it's probably this time, Representative Clem sits on the Measure 37, it is probably, in my opinion, maybe the biggest issue that's in the legislature this session, and it's all about lack of flexibility. So as you design the system, whether it's in higher ed, in Portland, or wherever, just, this is the word of, I guess, I don't, it's not advice, it's just a comment that I'll make.
It's an excellent comment. My youngest son is 8 years old, gentlemen, and I look forward to watching him move through this system and follow his passions as he goes through in a very flexible system that makes the most of his strengths and his desires. Thank you both very, very much for being here, for your work.
Thank you.
We look forward to having additional discussions, and thank you for bringing all the copies of the Education Roundtable. I hope to get those to our subcommittee members as well.
Thank you.
Thank you, gentlemen. Is there anyone, do we have any sign-ups?
People want to talk with us?
Okay. We're going to go ahead and close the informational hearing and open a work session on House Bill 2265. Members, we'll have Mr. Olson remind us where we are with this.
Good afternoon, members of the committee. We considered House Bill 2265 at our last meeting of the full committee on January 26th and had some questions which the Department of Education endeavored to answer, and I emailed around to all the offices late last night. I will just reiterate what the measure does. The measure permits the Department of Education employees to transfer accrued but unused sick leave when they become a school district or education service district employee. It also permits school district or education service district employees to transfer accrued but unused sick leave when they become a Department of Education employee, and it declares an emergency effective July 1st, 2007. There is no subsequent referral. You have before you the updated preliminary staff measure summary as well as the fiscal impact statement. Again, we sent around some additional information to the Department of Education, and we have a couple members of the Department of Education in the audience should the committee have any further questions. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Olson. Representative Crummel, did you have your questions answered? I mean, you were the ones who had the questions on this bill. Let me put you on the spot if anybody else has questions.
Yeah, you can. Okay, here we go. See, now I'm saying this. I didn't see
okay,
this.
It came through email. I'll give you a moment there to look at it.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My jury is reading that, Representative Crummel. For Representative Dowland and Representative Roland, is this a burden on the if they transfer from Department of Education to a school district, you assume their crew's responsibility? Is that a...
No. No, probably you could have, in isolated cases, a person move into your district and cash in their... cash in is an inappropriate word. Consume their sick leave all at one time. I have never heard of that.
Mm-hmm.
The biggest thing that the sick leave does, there's an incentive to save your sick leave because it's counted in the PERS formula at retirement. But to the school district, there is no, other than that rare occasion where a person might get a long-term disabilitating disease. And I would want that sick leave there for that person.
Any further discussion?
I think my questions are answered, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. I would entertain a motion. Yes, please.
Mr. Chair, I move that House Bill 2265 move to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Dahlem has moved House Bill 2265 to the floor with due pass recommendation. Any further discussion?
Does the chair want this as a consent agenda?
Actually, no. I think there might be questions on this, and I would like to actually give Representative Roland a chance to take care of this. If we get that far, I'm not trying to jump ahead here. But that's where I'd like to go with it. Is there any further discussion?
Mr. Chair,
Representative Crummel,
the one point I guess that I would make it at this point anyway is that it is it's permissive, it's not requiring, so it still is going to be a choice of the department or of the district as to whether or not they would want to allow this, and that's going to be up to the local board to make that decision. So.
That's perfect. Thank you, Representative. Any further discussion? Seeing none, would you
Ryan Associate, please call the roll.
Representative Plaskett.
Aye.
Representative Zong.
Aye.
Representative Greenlee.
Aye.
Representative Kong.
Aye.
Representative Kremel.
Aye.
Representative Lim.
Aye.
Representative Groblin.
Aye.
Representative Wisnet.
Aye.
Chair Buffett.
Aye. Motion carries. Representative Groblin, would you be so
kind? I'd be honored.
Yeah. I appreciate that very much.
Your Honor,
I will close the carried. So are there any other matters before the committee? Yes, I want to remind you, thank you, that the members who are on the higher ed sub, there's no meeting on Monday for the higher ed sub, but we do have the higher ed or the sub for education innovation meeting on Tuesday.
Just
as scheduled.
Higher ed sub on Wednesday?
On Wednesday as well. Yes. And to put a kind of further ahead notice, we haven't received any kind of notification about this yet. We are looking at doing a road hearing with the Senate Education Committee in Ashland, of all places, towards the end of this month. But we'll get that notification.
Mr. Chair, this has nothing to do with us, but Superintendent Susan Costello, she is in Los Angeles.
Mm-hmm.
Her grandma has passed away.
Oh.
And so I think that we sent a nice card that might be a good thing for us.
Very good. Thank you, Representative. See nothing else? This meeting is adjourned. Thank you very much.